The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features ensure that you can take on any adventure. What kind of features? Well, how about the available H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud? Or the standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together? How about available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone? We're always trying to think about those great spring and summer getaways, but with a car like the Hyundai Santa Fe, anywhere can be your next adventure. To learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe, go to HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson, Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott. It's your call for the best college football coverage, from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Tom Fornelli, that's Danny Cannell, that's Bud Elliott, I'm Chip Patterson. Wild week of news at the NCAA level, at the college football level. We've got the moving pieces. It always happens around June. In July, obviously, we start to have media days, turn our attention towards the season ahead. But right now, things are shifting. We will get into the news that has come out about the potential future of the college football playoff. There's some transfer news that stood out. And as we're sitting here, Danny, I know you've got C-SPAN 3. You know, you always have C-SPAN 1 or 2 on in the background for all the Cover 3 podcasts. But the name, image, and likeness hearings are going on right now. Mark Emmert is in Washington, D.C. The senators are weighing in. Have you gotten any highlights so far from the early parts of the proceedings here on Wednesday?
Not a ton. I did get past. One is the Senate hearing on U.S. policy on Belarus. Two is the U.S. Senate just general discussion, I guess. It's a continued debate on President Biden's nomination of Zahid Quarashi to be the U.S. District Court Judge for New Jersey. Mm. And then three, they have relegated.
Everybody knows that.
Right. And then three is the NCAA. I just saw the opening statements and I saw Cory Booker, who started out. And I was getting irritated already just because I don't know. There's so many things that are said, and I get why certain politicians will say things. They want to make their case for change, but I was getting irritated already just by some of the exaggerated, over-the-top type of conversations that take place. That was all I saw. I'm very curious to see some of the testimony. Mark Few was up a couple minutes ago, head coach at Gonzaga. So I'm curious to say, I'm a little bit bummed that they don't have any current athletes up there. Like, why not? Like, why wouldn't you have some current athletes, student athletes that are up there? So I don't know. I don't know if we'll glean anything. This is probably a lot of grandstanding. And, you know, as much as I've heard, we're doing this for the kids. I feel a lot of it's about for the votes. And that's what they do. I mean, that's not, and it's bipartisan. It's both sides kind of grandstanding here. So we'll see if we learn anything from it. But I do think it's a massive issue that needs to be addressed ASAP, because July 1st is only a few weeks away. And that's where I live in Florida, all of a sudden it's going to be open season. So that is specifically why they're having this hearing, to try to address the time crunch that they're on with the calendar.
The NCAA is basically just Sean Bradley. It's big and it exists only to get dunked on repeatedly.
Oh, it might be too soon, Tom. Might be too soon.
But I'm saying, like, that's like the whole, the Senate hearing with the NCAA, like you say, like the politicians are there. They're just doing their thing. Cause like, this is a chance for everybody in the room to agree. Like, hey, you know who people hate more than us? These guys. Let's just crap on them for the next few hours. Get some goodwill with the voters. Be like, see, they care about the kids. They care about the things we care about. We could be like, hey, we got NIL going for you, even though it's already been happening.
It's performative.
Yes.
Totally. It's 100% performative. I mean, they do have that oath out there, right? Because listen, Rick Pitino told us that oath is something. You will admit some things that you might not otherwise admit, you know, but if you have that oath, maybe we catch a little like a stray nugget here and there that we wouldn't have otherwise picked up, or maybe it helps fill in some of the details, but we'll, you know, We'll have it. Danny's our C-SPAN 3 correspondent. We might cycle back before the mailbag episode with just some gleanings on what happened. But some of the big news within all of college football comes out this week as, you know, Dennis Dodd reported on this for CBSSports.com. But there's also a lot of reporting going on. Pretty much every major outlet had a report on the future of the college football playoff. And there are two things that stand out to me. Number one, because all the reporters got it, more or less the same story, feels like a trial balloon, right? Like, we're just college football playoff. We're just going to send this out. We're just going to see what the reaction is and sort of see where everyone is standing on the many different options before they come together for 2 days of meetings to be able to come up with a model that they can then present to the college football playoff managers. And even at that point, I don't think that we will have an announcement of what the future college football playoff is going to look like. So even as we start to try to answer and debate some of these questions here on this podcast, I think that it is very much a wait and see situation. Number two, there will be no changes for the next 2 years. This year and next season are locked in. It is a four-team playoff. Number three, and Bud, you mentioned this yesterday.
Go ahead while you can.
Number three, Bud, you mentioned this yesterday. The 12-team proposal probably came as a surprise to some fans. So I wanted to pitch it to you guys. Did the 12-team proposal and the reported momentum behind a 12-team model, did that come across as a surprise to you? And then we can sort of dive into, Tom, you've got a piece on CBSSports.com saying let's go back to plus one. You know, or like just a 1-2 situation. You know, we've got a lot of thoughts that's been exchanged on social media as well. So were you surprised by any of the details from some of the reporting this week coming from the college football playoff?
I mean, I was certainly somewhat surprised. But in reading the rationale that Dennis Dodd and some other guys reported, I thought it was interesting in that some of these conferences don't support going to 6 or to 8. I believe I read in one of these articles that the SEC didn't really support 6 or 8, which would make sense, right? SEC right now is getting an average of like 1.25 teams in per college football playoff. That's a pretty nice share out of 4 possible teams per year. 12 would allow them to keep their large share. And obviously they all make more money in the aggregate with more games. I also think that if you want to blow up how much money you're getting from ESPN and other sources for the playoff, the best way to do so is not simply adding, you know, one more game or adding 2 more games. It's going from 3 games to 7 games, which is what the 12 game model with the buys would do. So I think that is the one that forces the TV rights holders to reconsider your payment structure the most substantially.
First of all, I'll start by saying Tom and I are going to have it out here in a little bit. We'll wait and get our initial thoughts here. I don't know about his back school way. Yeah, you know, we'll have it out. I was genuinely like kind of ready for anything, especially when we heard the news that they were given 63 different options. Like that was what they were presented with from this outside company, whoever, you know, we could have given them this. Why didn't we figure this out? I could have come up with 63 ideas, right? But I think the reason people might be surprised is because what, myself included, what have the proponents for expansion been saying for the last 5 or 6 years? Let's go to 8. Let's go to 8. And I remember even on this podcast talking about it, saying, well, and we each kind of said, what would you want to do? And I said, well, if it's the easiest thing to do, like make a tweak or two, it would be expand 8, 5 power 5, 3 wild card. Like that's pretty easy. But then the last time I think we talked about this, I said, well, if we're going to blow this up, like then let's really look at what the best options are. And that's where I'm kind of impressed that they are considering this 12-team playoff, because when you start diving into it, I think there are some really intriguing aspects to it that can make it really attractive. Like I was looking at 8 because it was better than 4, but I like some of the incentives that are in here, such as a bye, home field advantage for those teams playing in the first round. Like, so I'm actually excited by the fact that it's not an easy, let's go to 8 and let's do it in a year, because then it feels hasty. It feels like that was easy. I want them to think outside the box and hopefully come up with a solution that we're not arguing about again in just 2 years and saying, and then we have to hear Bill Hancock, who is definitely going to say this is better than the four, even though we've heard him say four is great. And like, and then he's going to say 12 is the perfect number. Like, it's going to be the same issue, but let's get this wrapped up where at least we address a lot of the problems. And it feels like from the comments and solutions that they are looking at some of the very serious issues that, and they want to be ready to answer any potential problems.
I was surprised by the number simply because we've heard plenty about six and eight. I thought 12 was kind of, I knew 12 was a possibility. I didn't think that's where they would go, but I honestly also think that's a negotiating ploy. Cause like Bud, you mentioned the conference that's pushing the 12 is the SEC. Cause the SEC wants to play up, get four teams in every year, at least. I mean, that's why it's like a 12 team field with five conference champions, one group of five school, and then six at larges. Well, most of those at larges, based on current rankings or we've seen in recent years, are going to come from the SEC. So of course the SEC wants 12 teams. And if you're a commissioner of any of the other conferences and you acquiesce to a 12 team playoff to help the SEC get richer and separate itself from you further, you don't deserve to have your job. So keep that in mind when it comes to trying to figure out what you want to do next. As for the expansion, Danny, you mentioned like you're hoping that we're in a situation where we're, you know, it's not a few years from now. It's like, well, we got to change this. In Dodd's article, it's mentioned how there's the thought of getting to 24 eventually already. So it's going to happen no matter what they do. It's, I don't know if we're going to have at it. I'm just, it's dumb. It's pointless. It's not going to fix anything. Everything that they tell you it's going to change and make it better is BS. All it's going to do is increase the money for the schools, for the networks, for the conferences, and for all the people in charge. It's not going to make the sport better. It's not going to drive further interest. Any fan who cares about college football is not going to stop watching his team in the middle of October because his team no longer has a national title hope. They haven't yet. Why are they going to start now? In fact, expanding the playoff will probably only lead to more fan apathy, because if we look at professional sports, we have seen professional sports leagues expand. And when the leagues expand, they expand the playoffs. And then we, over time, you get to a point where it's championship or bust. And then what happens? The next progression in professional sports is, well, if we can't win a championship, we might as well not even bother to win. So then that's going to come to college football. Now, obviously in college, you can't tank because it's not like they're draft picks. So you don't get, you know, you don't get to pick the top five-star recruit because you finished last in your conference. But it's going to lead to fan apathy in that with more teams in the playoff is going to be, it's already the only thing that matters. Now it's going to be the only thing that matters even to a greater extent. And it's going to be, well, if my team's not competing for a playoff, what the hell do I care?
Okay. That,
go ahead.
No, my bad.
I just, it's like, Dan, you mentioned to me on Twitter, you know, like, do I want to go back to dial up phone? And
yes.
You're confusing progress with change. Like, expanding isn't progress. Like, if I decide one day to stop ordering, you know, my usual monthly order of like a 12-inch sausage and black olive pizza from my local pizza joint, and 1 month I say, you know what, I'm going to go to 14 inches. Have I progressed, or have I just ordered more pizza?
So here's why I think it's progress, right? I think there's one issue, and let's be clear, this is not going to solve parity, right? This isn't going to all of a sudden, no, we're going to see 12 fresh faces in the playoff. Bama probably still would have won last year. Clemson the year before, Ohio State, like the same teams, the best teams that are there are probably still going to be there, especially if they get a bye the first round. So that's not an issue. But some of the issues that are a massive problem, like opting out, which I do think is a significant problem when we see bowl games and the bowl system itself is problematic right now, because a lot of the bowl games, we see apathy. We see, you know, coaches admitting, hey, we didn't, like Dan Mullen says, we didn't even have our team there, so it really didn't matter. Like, who cares? Other teams, you see, you know, the best players in the game to decide to skip it to prepare for the NFL. So you address that problem immediately. For instance,
you create, now this is where I know.
What?
You create a new one. So you're not thinking about it. You're only looking for solutions.
No, but see, I think you do.
I think Danny's right on this a little bit.
But so like, I went and put out a mock, like what it would have looked like last year. It was very rough. And I'm sure there's some fans could point out some inconsistencies there. I went off the last regular season ranking, which I might've even messed that one up somewhat. But for instance, two of the matchups, because the proposal that they have, and this is very rough, like this is one of the ones that was kind of leaked, and I got this one from Thamel, was four, the top four get byes. So Bama, Notre Dame, Clemson, Ohio State, byes. But the first round matchups, which take place on the campuses, which I think is awesome, two of them would have been bowl games that we saw. For instance, we saw Florida, Oklahoma in a crappy product where half of Florida wasn't there. This time around, 7-10 matchup, Florida would have to host Oklahoma in Gainesville. Like, I guarantee you Kyle Pitts is playing in that game because a championship is still at stake. The other one is Cincinnati and Georgia would have squared off in a game where the SEC doesn't have an – first of all, you don't have the opt-outs, but then they can't say, well, we didn't really want to be there. And Georgia would have to travel to Cincinnati in this hypothetical. So, like, I think some of the solutions that are there, like, that solves, boom, two of your biggest bowls, which were diminished because players didn't play in, all of a sudden that problem is solved. The regular season thing, I disagree. So I think there will always be a difference. Now, maybe I'm too idyllic. I do think college fans root differently. I think they believe differently in their programs. I think they attend games because of the pageantry, tailgating, historic value to it, bring your kids, whatever it is, where yes, if you're Bama, but even Bama fans are still going to go to games if they're not in the playoff. I still think your mid-level team is going to attend games in the regular season regardless.
They want to be able to – sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I think they want to be able to believe, right, yes, for longer. The one thing I really like about this, and I just want to be very clear, I do not think that this is a better solution for determining a champion. I actually think it's worse. I think it is going to lead to the best team winning less often. And I don't care. What I do care about is that fans in Pac-12 country and Big 12 country and throughout the country, that they don't check out as much on articles that are about the playoff and podcast episodes that are about more the national or regional landscape on Halloween, right? If you have a 12-game playoff, look, everything is already about the playoff. Tom already admitted it as much. ESPN, you know, shuts it down every single
day.
That's
not a good thing.
No, but it's not we're not like that. You can't put the genie back in the bottle here. So you might as well make it. You can't.
Nobody ever tries to put the genie back in the bottle. They just say you can't, and then they accept it. You can put it back in the bottle any damn time you want.
But they won't, and it would be bad business to do so. If you make the playoff more inclusive, I do think that a lot more teams' games are going to matter much deeper into the season, which I think will make fans care about the sport that we cover for longer. That's why I'm in favor of inclusion. I don't know if I love the model of 12, to be totally honest, but right now you hear from way too many fans that say, like, there's no shot to make it. It's biased. Like there's not even every team gets in. I love the auto bids in that it basically makes those conference championship games pretty meaningful, or more meaningful than it is now. How many times have we gone into the SEC title game? We know Bama's in, win or lose. Now, look, we still will have that situation in some cases. Bama's going to be in, win or lose in a 12-game format, I guarantee you. But the team that beats them, they're in with an auto bid. And that's going to be a bid stealer from somebody else. I think Danny addressed the bowl game point pretty well. Those bowl games have sucked recently. I don't think you're going to have nearly as many opt-outs for the playoff. I'm sure some kids will opt out of the playoff.
You're going to have opt-outs in the regular season instead because teams are going to know that they have a playoff berth wrapped up, so coaches are going to rest players. So now you're getting rid of opt-outs for exhibition games and putting them in games that matter.
I agree.
Not when you incentivize. This is the good thing. This is where I think the committee thinks ahead. You get the first four get byes, and the 5-8 get home field advantage. So I think you're incentivizing not resting players, not opting out of games. And granted, if you're going to get a blowout, you're going to get a blowout. Like, I'm okay with that if you rest a player in the second half of let's say Georgia's playing Georgia Tech and Georgia Tech sucks that year. Like, of course you're going to sit guys so they don't get hurt. But that game wasn't going to be good anyway, no matter what the playoff scenario was set up like.
If I'm Clemson and I've got my division wrapped up, I'm undefeated. Got my division wrapped up. There's still 2 or 3 weeks left in the season before I'm playing whatever, you know, mediocre ass team from the coastal I'm going to face in Charlotte for the ACC championship. And my quarterback's banged up. I want to make sure he's fresh for the ACC title game. I'm Clemson. I'm getting a top four seed. I'm undefeated. I can afford to lose a game. you know what? I'm going to rest a couple players.
I don't know if that's true, though. I don't know if you would be guaranteed a
first
top
of all, team. It's
happened in every sport. It's happened in every single sport. We literally watch the NBA. You can't watch the regular season anymore because the players don't play the regular season games because they know they don't matter. And that's exactly what is going to happen to college football. And I'm guaranteeing you 5 years from now, we're going to be bitching about players sitting out regular season games.
Let's accept that Tom is right, that some games will matter less. I think he's probably right there.
Clemson also already does that.
I don't think so.
Clemson already rests
Clemson
you.
Clemson already does it. Yeah. Sure.
No, we will have a net positive and meaningful games. I will say, we will have a couple games that will be less meaningful. We will have a lot more games that will be a lot more relevant to a lot more people and keep the overall engagement in the sport higher. You have many more opportunities for teams to play spoiler in this role than you normally would. I think you have a lot more games that would matter. That's why I like it. It's definitely not better for determining the champion. And there will be some games that will not be as attractive. Like, I don't think you can totally deny that. I just think overall it's net positive. If you, because I think four is just a bad number to be at, personally.
I think it's a net positive for revenue. I don't think it's a net positive for the game. I don't.
I think it's a positive in every direction, including determining champion. Like, in what other sport does the best team have to win? Like, if you're the best team, you win. Like, no one says, like, we didn't look at the Tampa Bay Bucks and say, well, they didn't win as many games as the Chiefs in the regular season. So, that Super Bowl is just not as good because they weren't the best team in the regular season. Like, yeah, it's okay.
That I disagree with. I think that the best team on overall body of work, not just who got hot for the last
But that never happens in any sport. Like, yes, sometimes it does happen. Like, nobody's going to argue some championships. But you do see seasons where teams that we thought were the best ended up losing, and maybe a team that got hot at the right time did end up winning and winning a championship. But that's what makes sports great. Like, aren't we trying to get more upsets so we get more surprises, we get more compelling
historically
games?
Historically, no. Not in college football. Football, historically, the answer is no. We don't want Cinderellas. We love them in college basketball. We don't love them in college football.
And I don't think the Cinderella story is going to be FAU down the road for me. Like, it's not going to be a Butler scenario.
Cinderella will be? You know who the 10th seed that wins the national title is going to be? It's going to be Clemson coming off a down year where it was 9-3, had a couple injuries in October, lost a couple big games, and things came together at the end. So the Cinderella is going to be the blue blood.
Year. It could have been Texas A&M. Who maybe had they given a chance.
They would have been a 5 seed. That's not a Cinderella. They'd have been a 5 seed. I'm talking about the teams that are going to be 10, 11, 12.
Historically, though, we have not had the playoff. We have not had the drum beat that the only thing that matters is the playoff. So we can talk about how historically we don't love usurpers. We don't love upsets. We love the dominant team. But the game has changed.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about
if we accept we're not going to go back? Like, they could go back. Tom's right. They could in theory. They won't.
They're definitely not going back.
Is the best number 4? If you're going to be stuck with a playoff style format,
I don't love. What do y'all think about 17? Because that's the number of games. If I'm the 5 seed through the 12 seed, I'm playing 17 games.
FCS kids do it, and we don't hear anybody bitching about it because their market value is zero.
Okay.
Yeah, they're
going up against FCS athletes. They're not going up against future NFL players.
Yeah, I've seen some beat up.
To be facing in the playoffs.
Yeah, I've seen some beat up teams. Game 15. A lot of teams show up to that national championship game struggling.
Beat the hell up.
Again, that's why there's incentive to run the table and win.
So that's why there's incentive to rest your players during the regular season.
Well, then you've got, if you can rest your players and still win, congratulations on recruiting well. And congratulations on developing and being able to have
got
that competitive
the advantage
depth.
Now? Whose advantage gets even bigger? No, we're doing this to allow the little guys a chance. No, you're only going to make the gap wider. You're only giving Alabama and Clemson and all these schools a bigger safety net. You're allowing them to screw up. You're allowing other teams that haven't been good enough to reach the top four an avenue to get in. But we're not talking about the Iowa States and the Mississippi States and the Oregon States of the world. We're talking about the Texas A&Ms.
We would be talking about the Iowa States a lot longer, a lot deeper in the season than we would now.
We talked about them all last year. They never had a shot. We never stopped talking about them. We've been talking about them all offseason.
This is a good thing.
Yeah.
I'm saying, people just say this crap like it matters. No, nothing changes, dude. It's like we talk about these teams all the time. It's literally our job.
Actually,
nobody could see.
Nobody outside of Iowa cares.
No, I don't think we do. I'm a believer that you will see upsets, which are good for the game, if we do get to an expansion play. Now, we might not see it every year, but I think we will be provided more diversity, like with schools. Like, but you know what the ironic thing is? When I did my thing, the top 12 teams from last year's final rankings, guess who was left out? The Pac-12.
Entirely?
Top 12. They did not have a team ranked in the top 12 at the end of the regular season.
After auto bid, though.
Championship games.
They would have had to.
Oregon would have got their auto bid despite not winning their division, but winning their conference. Of course,
that's, Bama won a national championship without winning a
team. So
when we talk about this, though, and this is one thing, like I totally agree with you guys.
Participation trophies, that's all it is.
Oh, stop it. Don't give me that excuse. Now you sound like Barrett Salee.
That's this participation trophy culture we're in. Everybody gets a trophy.
We give a participation trophy when we allow teams to advance that didn't win their division. Like that's the participation trophy. So it already does happen.
They're going to be getting in the playoff now. Now we're hitting them playoff first.
They already do, though.
Congratulations. You finished in third place in the SEC West. You're one of the 12 best teams in the world.
They already do, though. They already got that advantage one time. So in all this, I totally agree with you guys. 17 games, you know, we're looking at name, image, and likeness. You know, maybe that more of that money would have to go to the players, and you would probably have to give more to the football players, which I don't understand how that would work with Title IX. But
how much do we think we're going to give the players from this? Be real.
But why do we need 12 games in the regular season? I get, and you talk about putting the genie back in the bottle. Like, I don't think there's any way we're going back to 11, but we saw last year, maybe, like I thought was a really exciting season. The SEC, we saw incredible matchups because they played against Power Five teams. That's the one thing I wish would come of this. If we're going to blow up the playoffs and kind of start from scratch with a new model, why don't we use it to address the differences in scheduling?
Yes.
Like, let's get on the same page. And let's say, all right, if we're going to add another game or two to some teams, let's dial back one in the regular season. Is anybody going to miss? Even a fan of a team who might only get to go to that one game when Ohio State plays, whoever, or Alabama plays, you know, whoever, Clemson plays the Citadel. Like, do we really need those games on the schedule? No. So, and then what you do, because I get the blowback that comes from, well, that makes our whole entire athletic budget. How about we give some of that money to them? Like, and give them some of the money that's going to, there's going to be a windfall. Clearly, that's why we're doing this. But dial back the schedule, give the money to those schools, and get every conference on the same page. Like, can we get every conference to have the same regular season schedule? Because that's a way to generate parity.
The SEC will dictate what schedule everybody plays.
For the record,
I wish it would, because
they're dictating a 12-team playoff.
I wish they would, because I think if they did, maybe we'd listen to Nick Saban, who has always said, let's play Power Five opponents only.
If that is one of the side effects, that will be one of the very few side effects about this that I'm very thrilled about, is a uniform scheduling process, because that's something I've been saying people need, especially.
But I haven't heard that, which is worrisome. Like, maybe we're just going to do the playoff, and that's going to
be that's the other thing, too, because there's not going to be any. Maybe there will be, but the cynic in me says there's not going to be any set of guidelines for selection for the playoff, because they want to keep that debate. So it's going to be six automatic berths and then six at-larges, but there's going to be no criteria. It's literally just going to be who a group of people think are the best six teams, which is horse to be blunt, especially when you're expanding to 12 and it's no longer four. Like, when it's at four, you kind of don't really have much of a choice but to go that way. At 12, there are plenty of ways you could figure out which teams work their way in, but they're not going to do that. So again, it's not going to be a playoff. It's going to be a larger invitational tournament.
For the record, I don't care about competitive balance or parity in college football. I'm totally fine with the same teams winning every year. And I think it's good to have somebody set the standard and say, come beat us. Like, this is, we are winning at this level. We are recruiting at this level. And if you don't want us to win these football games, then get your game up. I think that is good for the sport. But I don't think this drifts too far into to say we want more access, but then have the other argument be, but the same teams are going to win all the time. I think that's okay. Now more teams get a taste and fall short, and then you find out what you need to do. You know what happened last night? I was in PNC Arena for game 5 watching my favorite hockey team lose to a $100 million roster, okay? And what that was for the Carolina Hurricanes was an opportunity to look and say, okay, we've got a great young core. We've had three playoff years in a row, but this team that just won the Stanley Cup, they've got it going. It was a revealing series for my favorite hockey team to look across the way and be like, all right, this is what we've got to do. And so when teams number 5, 6, 7, and 8 get into the college football playoff, they win that first game, they go in with all the momentum and fall on their face to a top four team, then they go into the offseason like, we got to step our game up. So I kind of like all, I don't want to jump on the boat that says like, I want to have total parity for our championship winners, because when someone is truly dominant, I think that everyone else having to chase them makes the sport a little bit better.
I agree with that. I also look at Knicks fans. They knew they weren't going to win the NBA championship. How excited were they to be back in the playoffs?
So some of them probably thought they were going to win the NBA title.
Even better.
But again, no, these are Knicks fans. We shouldn't compare everybody to the delusion of that fan base.
You know, I mean, if you're in some of these conferences that are not winning the title, you're probably smart enough to realize that your teams are not going to win the title very often or not anytime soon. But still, selling them the illusion that they can – be giving them a ticket to that playoff and selling tickets to the games that are being played to basically go to the playoff, that keeps them interested. That keeps people like legitimately talking about those teams for more than just the first 2 months of the season. That's why I like this. Do I think that, you know, the 12 seed's going to win this thing? Maybe sometime in my lifetime, but not often, right? It's still going to be the very best teams. I think the Chip's larger point about, hey, like it gives people something to chase. I think that's true in sports that have like salary caps or realistic belief that your team can emulate what some of these better teams are doing. And there's not a whole lot of teams that can crank it to the level that a few of these teams right now are doing nationally. That's kind of a separate discussion. But look, fans love to delude themselves into thinking they have a shot to win it. And they absolutely love making the playoff or being in the playoff race. You know, baseball kind of flubbed it with this one game play-in crap. But other than that, like, people are really excited to be in a playoff race down the stretch. This is going to create playoff races pretty often. You know, we're also going to have Cinderellas who somehow, you know, conference championship upsets do happen. Not super often, but they happen.
I will say one thing we should consider, though, that I don't think we'll get much. But by expanding the playoff and putting more teams in the playoff, you're guaranteeing that far more team season ends with a loss. Like, it ends on a sour note. Like, if at least in the bowl system, if you don't make the playoff, fans have the bowl where it's like, we go in, we win a bowl game. That's something that helps, you know, it's something you celebrate. It's something you like, you talk about 10 years. Hey, remember when we won the Sugar Bowl or, you know, whatever bowl against whatever team. Now,
Didn't you just say you don't want to give out participation trophies? Now you're like, let's give everybody a participation.
We're talking about for fans, the fan experience. Now every single fan except for one team, their season is going to end sad. And that's the memory that they're going to.
For some teams, though, if you hung in there with a game against Alabama and didn't get blown out, you'd be like, all right, there's a sign of hope. We can come back next year. Like, that's okay that teams have to go home with a loss. For fan bases, too.
This old
leads to apathy.
Hey, no, it doesn't. I'll tell you, this old John Bunting era UNC fan in Keenan Stadium watching us fight hard and lose. Like, there's a Bunting bobblehead on my bookshelf. And you know what it was to commemorate? An 8-5 season. They made a bobblehead to commemorate the 8-5 season. And that's hanging on to it, baby.
What leads to apathy is if you're a fan of one of these teams, it's like not a top five type team, and you go into the season knowing, hey man, if we hit our best possible projection, we still don't have a shot at this 14 playoff. Now you can tell them, Tom Fornelli can sit there and say, hey guys, guess what? The 12 team system, you got a shot to get in, but you can't win. Come November, if they're in that race, they are not going to give a damn what Tom Fornelli says about their ability to actually win the playoff, because they're like, look man, we're good enough to make it. We got our ticket to the dance. Hell, we already got here. You haters said we couldn't get here. Why can't we win the whole damn thing? That just keeps them caring.
The couple issues that I wonder about, and I do not know the answer to this, because I want to keep conference championship games. Clearly the networks do too. And we just mentioned, what if somebody knocks off, who was it, Clemson, Miami last year? Mm-hmm. Or whoever.
Northwestern, Ohio State.
Yeah, so Clemson still would have gotten in. Now they wouldn't have got a bye maybe, but I don't like that aspect of this. I don't know if there is even a solution to that unless you make the conference championship games like a semifinal. I don't know the solution to it, but there's going to be a situation that that unfolds that I will not like and you talk about in the future complaining about, where a team loses its conference championship game and still gets into the playoff and maybe even potentially comes and wins the national championship. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the solution to that, but that will be a problem because I think.
Why is that a problem?
What's that?
It's already happened.
Why is that a problem?
So, well, it hasn't happened yet with a conference champion losing. We haven't seen an upset in a conference championship game yet.
Notre Dame still made it. Notre Dame still made it after losing to Clemson, but then of course they lose to Alabama.
You're right. This year, I was going back 2 years. I was going.
So you think a conference champion losing or a conference championship game loss is worse than just not even winning your division and winning a national title? Like, we've already crossed that bridge,
right? But I didn't like Notre Dame advancing last year. I think there's optics in that when you get to a postseason, like once the regular season is done and we're calling them championship games. I think those games should be worth more, both advancing, getting a title, winning your conference, but also losing. Like we talk about losing the last game of your season in the postseason in any sport I've ever played. If you lose, your season's over. So that's like, it's a weird, and I didn't love Notre Dame advancing last year either. Cause that did feel like it took away from the ACC championship game. And I don't think the conference championship game should be diminished like that, where you could lose and still move on.
So all my conference
way to keep that from happening would be
go to two.
Yeah, all right. Backwards. So my conference championship is like definitely drafting from college basketball. I don't think that you should be ineligible. I think that just makes the at-larges sweat. Which means fan bases of these at-large teams are looking at the rankings going into Championship Saturday, watching a conference game that they're not even a fan of, rooting hard for an outcome because they know that that would like set off the dominoes that allow them to make the playoff. Like, it brings in everyone on Conference Championship Saturday with specific rooting interests based on, you know, if this result holds with the favorite winning, then we should be in. But if there is an upset, we might be out. And the different ways that you could see that, the debates that could go on for those at-large teams on Conference Championship Saturday, I think that that could be engaging. The idea of a bid thief is kind of fun to me.
Like, you know who would have been a huge Ohio State fan last year? Notre Dame. Can you imagine if Northwestern pulled that upset?
Because then they'd be locked in.
Yeah.
Let me ask this question, because this kind of gets to the crux of my problem with this. And again, I'm not anti-playoff. I just don't think it's a solution or like anything. It fixes anything. Who does it benefit to have fans caring about other teams playing in conference championships and the playoff and have the interest? It benefits the television networks that broadcast the games, and it benefits the media networks like us who write about it and generate the interest in it. It helps us make money. How does it help the sport? Because we are molding the sport to television and to media. We are not trying to fix the sport to actually improve the sport. And that's what my problem with this is. We pretend we're fixing things. We're not. We're just trying to find a way to put more money in our pockets.
Do you think increased fan interest and money is bad for the sport?
It's a short-term thing, because guess what? As soon as that happens, the next thing, like when we went from 2 to 4, is, well, shit, now we got to find a way to get more money. And you don't really worry about what you're doing to the game in the long run, because the people in charge who are trying to get money are only worried about their jobs in the short term and keeping their jobs and getting as much money out of it as they can and making their bosses happy. So at the end, what you're trying to improve is the bottom line, and you're standing within your job. And eventually, the sport gets kind of The sport gets kind of screwed because of it.
You know,
I don't know that college ball is going to be around in 20 years anyway. So, you know,
I like the rate we're going.
All right. On the other side, we're fixing the sport. I got questions. And also this 20-year no college football projection. Woo!
That was just totally off the cuff. Like, I'm just saying, like I'm more worried about the next 10 years, next 15 years of college football. And I also don't really, I worry that I'm missing something, because I think Fornelli is a really, really bright guy, but I don't really see the downside to this that much. But I'm also not looking at it as a way to totally fix the sport. I think the 4-team setup is really not very good for the sport. I think the BCS is probably better than the 4-team personally. But I do think expanding would be better than staying at 4.
Is the sport broken? We'll get into that and more next.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
All right. So I, as part of this conversation, you know, knowing some of these beeps need to be dropped, but Tom, yeah, I think you need to send Coca some flowers for going in there and making sure that YouTube doesn't come across too explicit. All right, so Tom, do you think that college football is like? Do you think that college football is broken, like from a place where it needs to be fixed?
No, I don't think it was. I felt like the sport was fine. Again, it's. Here's a weird, okay. Going back to the point I was making about we're not really fixing the sport, we're fixing things for ourselves. If we go to the world of soccer, where, I don't know, Danny, but there's this thing called VAR, and it's replay review like we have for our sports here. But we have seen with VAR in soccer, like it is pissed fans off because like when it comes to the offside rule, like they've got, it's ridiculous. Like they're measuring guys who are offside by the rule by 2 millimeters to go into reviews and they're ruling out goals. So the solution that they've come up with for this, the quote unquote solution, is not to get rid of the VAR or change the VAR. It's to change the rule. So they are now suiting the rules of the game to the technology that they brought into judge the game. And I feel like this is kind of what we're doing with college football. We're not fixing anything. We're imagining problems that don't really exist. And we're trying to find solutions to them, saying, well, we need to generate fan interest. Last I checked, the television contracts that networks are signing with conferences aren't getting smaller. I don't think the fan interest is going away. Fan interest in sports overall went away the last year, but that's because of the pandemic and the fact that the stadiums were empty and it led to some apathy and it changed the way people view sports. Because now that we've seen fans come back, like, remember, did any of you guys watch the NBA playoffs last year when it was in the bubble?
Mm-hmm.
Compare that experience to what you're experiencing now with fans back in the arena. How much better is it?
How much
more interested are you in watching it?
Absolutely.
Because the drama, the theater, all of that is back. And college football, once we get fans back in the stands this fall, bunch of packed full houses, will be fine. The television ratings will recover. The playoff ratings every single year when we stick it for will get bigger or larger depending on the teams playing in it. I'm telling you, having Iowa State in the playoff will not increase ratings. It will just give the network broadcasting it more inventory to sell more advertising. It won't fix anything. It won't solve anything. We're fixing problems that don't exist, but we're selling them as problems to give us excuses to do it.
Anecdotally, the ratings
are going to be down this year.
The ratings are going to be down?
Yeah, it's on New Year's Eve again. Do you see that? The first round?
That's just stupidity.
No, I know. That's a total. It's not a problem I'm talking about.
It's the Big Ten's fault.
Yeah,
it's the Rose Bowl's fault. But yeah,
but here's where I disagree with you. I do think we have problems. We have players that don't want to play in the postseason that are opting out. Like, that to me is a problem. And this would potentially fix that for some of the teams who, by the way, guess what? Because they're good, maybe not just good enough in the top four, right outside, they have NFL guys on their team, and so they're skipping the bowl games. We already went over how that would have been fixed with the 12.
You say players sitting out bowl games is a problem. Why?
It is.
Why?
Because I want to. When I watch games, I want to see the best players that played for a season.
So when you're watching the New Mexico Bowl, mm-hmm. the biggest concern in your mind is that the starting left tackle is not playing because he's got an NFL future, so he set out the New Mexico Bowl.
That's I'm only watching the New Mexico Bowl if I'm stuck at my in-laws over Christmas.
But this is my point.
If I'm watching the Sugar Bowl, it's because I want to watch really good football. I care about the stars.
We're quote-unquote expanding the playoff to put more meaningful games, so that way players who are sitting out the meaningless bowl games that we're trying to complain don't sit out the meaningless games that don't matter. How is that a problem?
No, but that is a problem. See, that to me is
a problem. What does it affect?
What does it do? The product on the field. Like, when you watch games, I don't want to see anybody hurt either.
Okay.
But like when the Orange Bowl, when Derrick King gets hurt, I'm like, oh, that sucks for this game. Like, I want to see teams compete at full strength. I think that is one of the problems. I think the other problem that is very true. Now, you could say, hey, Pac-12, you got to get better. But the very fact that we have five Power Five conferences and we only have four teams that get it, to me, is a problem that was started by whatever evil genius thought it was a good idea because it drives debate. But you are sending a Power Five conference champion packing to somewhere else. I think they should be given access to the playoffs. So I think that is a problem. So there's two problems that I think you address with this expansion. Like, I think there's a lot of problems that are addressed in here. The regular season, late game, like, we see a lot of games in November that you want to talk about meaningless games that are between pretty good brands that don't matter. All of a sudden, like, I'd say now you've got maybe 16 fam. This is on a very broad, generous level, 16 fan bases that are watching in November that feel really invested in making the postseason. If we expand to 12, that goes up like to 40, especially if we have automatic bids with getting in the conferences. But that number, so that helps keep the fans interested in the product longer in the season, which I think matters.
I think it goes from like probably 10 to 25, but I will point out that the evil genius that decided to set the number at four, the number was at four because of the power that the Bulls held at the time. Like, if you read Dan Wetzel's book, there was so much cronyism going on with the Bulls. You had to protect the Fiesta Bowl and the Sugar, and the Rose still kind of flexes its muscle and messes up the entire TV schedule. I'll tell you guys, if they did not have to worry about the Bulls, there's no way they would have gone just four. We would have already been at 8 or 12. Four was a really not a good idea. It was basically the best horse trading they could do to get a yes out of the power players so that they could keep the money flowing to the Bulls. But now that the Bulls have been rendered a little bit irrelevant because of players opting out, that no longer stands in the way. And I think we're going to get the solution that we probably should have had in the first place if we didn't have to deal with all the cronyism of the Bulls.
So players opting out is what fixed college football, huh? God, it was a problem. But no, Danny, going back to your point, though, about like the fans and keeping their interest, there are typically two types of college football fans. There are the fans that care about their school and their team, and that's the team that they watch and root for, and they care about their rivals and they pay attention to that, but mostly they're focused on their team. And then there are fans that are more like us that are, we just love the sport. We watch everybody. We can't get enough of it. Expanding the playoff, I don't think impacts fans that greatly, because if you only care about your team, you were following them even if they didn't have a chance to playoff. You have been for years. Now that having a chance for playoff, it's like, oh, hey, there's a new shiny toy that maybe can distract me for a little bit, but I don't think it really. As for us, four teams were watching. Two teams were watching. Before they even had the BCS, we were watching. When they go to 8, we'll watch. 12, we'll watch. 24, we'll watch. When they're at 64 and the regular season is 6 games long, we'll still be watching. So I don't really buy that it's going to really create more interest. It's going to create more interest in a specific kind of content.
Which we produce.
Which we produce. But again, Me, I'm not only concerned about myself. But well, no, it's just...
Then you're not walking in with the right set of values.
No, I 1,000,000% am. It's just I have a different approach to these things where it's like, instead of just looking at what it fixes, I try to figure out what the long-term side effects will be that nobody's looking at. And that's what I'm seeing.
Unintended consequences is the word that they throw out to scare us from, by speaking of name, image, and likeness. Like, you don't know what the unintended consequences are. You're like, you're right. I don't care.
So let's try to figure them out.
No, let's just do it.
Trying to do.
Nope. Let's Leroy Jenkins this, and let's just power through, knock everything over, and let's just sort of see what happens all along the way.
Another unintended consequence that I wanted to bring up. I know we're running real long here. This is going to separate the American Athletic Conference from the rest of Group of Five.
In a good way for the American?
For the American. Because the American right now, if the way things stand, if we look at the teams that have typically been at the top for that Group of Five spot, they've been American Athletic Conference teams. They have that kind of panache. They also have like the cold Big East. And you want to go back to the bowl cronyism, Mike Oresko, who was a part of the BCS when he ran the Big East and is now running the American. He's got that kind of influence in that room. He's got friends. The American is going to be getting, their champion is going to be getting selected more often than the Mountain West, Conference USA, Sun Belt, all that, which means that the American is going to be getting that playoff money, which means that the American is going to be pulling away from the rest of the Group of Five. So we're not going to have a Group of Five anymore. We are going to have a Power Six and four other conferences that will be struggling to survive.
Never mind. That was that heavy panting you hear is coming from the Northeast in the conference office. Oh no, they moved to Dallas, right? Didn't AAC? I know they used to be up in up in Hartford or whatever. All right, real quick, one last question before we get out of here because we have been running long. We've talked a lot about 12. We talked a lot about 4. You mentioned horse trading, and we mentioned that there may be a compromise if this thing lands at a 10. Do any of your opinions change? If it lands at an 8, do any of your opinions change? What's the, like, what is the sliding scale between 4 and 12 where you start to have any of your stances shift a little bit?
My noting that the SEC probably wouldn't vote for the other options, as Thamel and Dodd said in their articles, I think, is not to be taken as an endorsement of 12 as the best possible number. I just think it's, given the reports about the voting, it's probably the most likely number that would actually represent an improvement. I wouldn't mind 6, 8, or 10 at all. I'd probably prefer them.
I'm not going to hate any size playoff. I'm going to watch any size playoff because, as I said, I'm one of those fans. I'm going to watch it no matter what they do. So whatever they come back with, I'll live with. I'm still going to think it's solving problems that don't exist and just creating more problems. What would make me happy is if whatever number they get to, there's a set guideline for getting in, and every conference shares the money, no matter which teams get in or how many from every conference. The money is actually distributed evenly, because if you're gonna have a professional sports approach, start treating everybody the same like a professional sports league does. So the Conference USA, even if it doesn't get anyone in, it's getting the same share as the SEC. But that's never going to happen.
No. Or you separate the Power Five and Group of Five, which isn't going to happen either, I don't think. It doesn't sound like it. I'll say the exact same thing. And this is probably where my stance will evolve to. When we went from 2 to 4, I said it's better. When we go to 4 from wherever, I'll say it's better. But we're probably also going to complain about some aspect of it. Like, I just don't. College football has historically been a flawed sport. I don't think all of a sudden it becomes perfect. Maybe that's some of the things that makes it unique and generates a lot of discussion around the sport. But I hope they do come up with like solutions where you can point to. You say, oh, that makes sense. Like, because going with 4 spots for 5 Power Five teams didn't make much sense to me. Like, so I hope there's things that we can look at and say, yeah, this looks like they saw it with some foresight. They were trying to address certain solutions. You know, I'd love it if there was a way you could do it without a committee. I'm okay with a committee, but like, give us a structured guideline where it's very cut and dry, not very ambiguous, so you can talk your way into whatever teams you want to go with for the wild card slots. So
let's go BCS computers. We do 12-team playoff, but at-large rankings are determined by the computers. Let's go. And in the computers are only done by an average of Tom and Bud's power ratings. And we use those, and that's how we definitively get the best teams in the college football playoff.
That's actually a good point, Chip.
Because then you can't make money?
No, I hate that because the best teams are not always the teams with the best win-or-loss rating or win-or-loss record. But I do think the games need to mean something on the field, right? Like I routinely have teams that are 8-4, 9-3 ranked over the 11-1 teams. If you did that and you did a straight line power rating on this thing, people would lose their minds. And then the games really would, the games really would be meaningless.
Yeah. I will say this, Chip, I'm going to add an amendment. What would make me happy is like what you just said. Okay. No matter how many schools we go to, let me pick the teams.
Yeah. Let Tom pick the teams, and then Tom will be happy.
I will pick the most deserving teams, I guarantee.
Fascinating, fascinating conversation. And it will continue to go. Again, for those of you who want to check your calendar and figure out what kind of timeline we're working with here, item number one, we've got at least 2 years with no changes. The conversations are happening in person June 17th and 18th in Chicago. Tom, if you want to go, just knock on some doors and offer your expertise to this management group, then I'm sure
dragged out of there by security.
And then you know, by the time we get back for media days in July, I don't even know if we'll necessarily have the details, though we could at some point start to get reporting that will indicate how many teams might be involved, but how the bowl system is or is not included in the future playoff, and you know what is going to be used in terms of the method of picking the teams. I don't think we'll have that for quite some time, but it does seem like playoff expansion is inevitable, and we will be likely going to either 6, 8, 10, 12, maybe even 16 teams, but again, 12 seems to be one of the ones that's leading the way. We'll keep an eye on it. We'll keep the discussion going. You can follow him on Twitter at Danny Cannell. You can follow him at BudElliott3. You can follow him at Tom Fornelli. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
If you're not the SEC commissioner and you go to 12 teams without equal revenue, you're a moron and you deserve to be fired.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.